Rise and shine, everyone. How's it going out there? This is Amy, and it is another episode of Amy's Kids Show. In fact, this is episode number 172, and we are going to keep celebrating. There is so much amazing stuff all around us to celebrate, and we are celebrating something very special lately. We've been celebrating how we get along and what our founding fathers had to do with it, right? So we're celebrating fathers today for many reasons, but we are celebrating in particular our founding fathers who thought of a way of having a government in our country, the United States of America, so that we could have rights. Rights, and that our rights would be protected by our government. It's such a nifty system. It's really cool, and folks have been celebrating it for a long time now, ever since it was invented by our friends George Washington, Ben Franklin, and all the rest of them. We're going to hear more about them today. Boy, they got together, and they spent days and nights trying to figure out how they could get along, right? Because these 13 colonies that had to come together and form a government that they could agree to, well, they were just getting free from something called British rule, where they were ruled by the King of England. The King of England set all the rules and made all the decisions, even told them what they could do with their own houses, with their own words, and how they even had to pray. I mean, there was even a Church of England, and it was the only choice, right? So when people came to this country here and wanted to start something new, a lot of it had to do with that freedom of religion for them, right? And there are lots of other important freedoms that luckily our founding fathers discovered as they were arguing with each other, right? Because that communication and argument is actually a big part of it. That's called cooperation. And that's one of my favorite things to celebrate here on Amy's Kids Show. So how do we cooperate as humans? How do we make things as fair as possible? Well, we have to learn about the way we're doing it now. So if we can figure out maybe there is a better way, maybe this way's pretty good. Maybe we should make sure we're using it right in the first place, right? Well, that's what it's all about, folks. So we need to understand what type of government are we living under here and how's it going? Is it protecting our rights? Well, let's find out, folks. Let's get started. And remember, the whole point of being a kid is remembering how to get along.
Let's wiggle and a jiggle and a twirl and a pop. The world goes around and it's not going to stop. So let's all get along and share what we have. It makes you feel so good inside, it makes you feel so glad. Let's a wiggle and a jiggle and a twirl and a pop. The world goes around and it's not going to stop. So let's all get along and share what we have. It makes you feel so good inside, it makes you feel so glad. Let's a wiggle and a jiggle and a twirl and a pop. The world goes around and it's not going to stop. So let's all get along and share what we have. It makes you feel so good inside, it makes you feel so glad.
If we pull in opposite directions, we'll get nowhere. But if we all decide to pull together, we'll find it will make things easier. We call that a problem or a puzzle to solve. I reckon there is
there's no doubt. If I work with you and you work with me, we'll find a way to figure it out. We call that
folks, cooperation. That's what it's all about, right? Anybody could tell you that, especially the kindergartners out there, I'd imagine, and the first graders and the preschoolers, right? Getting along and cooperating is sort of the first thing that we have to figure out when we're getting along with our neighbors and our friends and the other people all around us, right? We have to find ways to cooperate. And that's why I like to start Amy's Kids Show with something a little childlike, right? For all you little ones out there, but also for everyone else, really. Because we all need to sort of remember, what's the point of it all, right? What's the original intention? Why did we even start getting together in the first place, right? And so we need to bring it down to that playful place. Remember playing with each other, and how would we figure out how to play and not fight and not argue? Or let me get back to reality here. Of course there's going to be fighting. Of course there's going to be arguing, right? We sort of have to expect that. That is part of the process. But how do we argue and be honest without hurting each other's feelings too bad, right? Well, that's what we're all learning here. And thank goodness, our founding fathers took the time to argue. It was actually a very important part of the process, because when they got out from under British rule, out from under having a king tell them what to do, and even how to pray and what church to go to and what to think and what they could do with their own homes and their own lives, right? Once they got out from under that and they started a new way of having a government, well, nobody really knew how that was going to work. How could we do that? How could we have our freedoms and still at the same time have a government that can run things, right? I mean, things have to work. People have to be able to get along and cooperate and work on problems. There are a lot of problems to solve. And if we come together, we can solve the biggest problems on earth if we come together, right? So how do we come together but then also still keep our freedom? Well, luckily, and probably through the process of arguing, our founding fathers decided that we needed a whole Bill of Rights, not just a constitution, but a whole, you know, the constitution gives the government power to run the government, right? And make sure things are going smoothly, right? And make sure we can be tranquil and live in peace and get things done, right? But then we also needed something else, they decided. Something to protect us, the people, from the government, in case it tried to get too big and bossy, right? And that's called the Bill of Rights. Let's go back and see what it was like when they were inventing it.
A convention had been in session for many months, attended by delegates representing the various colonies. Whatever they were doing, it seemed important. Some thought this convention was a waste of time. and others were unconcerned. Still, it was the subject of much discussion. From nearly every colony, delegates had come. From the commercial north and the agricultural south. From the ship towns of the east and the farm towns of the west. They soon realized that their job was not to patch up what we had, but to create a new union. The United States of America, with a central government. There were no rules to go by. Nothing seemed to fit. They had to find something that just suited their own needs, and they had to overcome all the ill will brought about by years of living as separate nations. There was argument and bickering. The convention heard a plan for a representation based on population. This would give the big states an advantage because of their larger population. The small states turned it down. They came back with their own plan. It was for an equal number of representatives from each state. This would give the smaller states an advantage. The big states didn't think too much of that. A deadlock followed. Basically, all the delegates wanted the same thing. One nation with a strong central government. Now they realized that in order to create this, they would have to make concessions and compromises on the controversial issues. So all the states made concessions on tariffs, currency, on all the problems that concerned them as states. The large ones agreed that all states should have equal powers. The small states agreed that representation should be according to population. In fact, the states deeded their western lands to the new government and surrendered other privileges in favor of a strong union. Their final draft was hammered out after many weeks. The delegates were to take the plan back to see if their states would ratify it. In November, a young man from the state capital visited Hilldale. He was speaking in favor of the new Constitution. I heard him and read a lot of literature about the proposed plan. The plan was called a Constitution of the United States and was a masterpiece of compromise, which created something larger than anybody expected. The United States was to be a republic with elected representatives. The plan was original, worked out to fit the peculiar circumstances. Government was to be by laws, not by officials. It was divided into three sections. The legislative branch to make the laws. An executive branch to carry on the business of government. And a judicial branch to decide questions of law under the Constitution. The legislative branch was itself divided into two parts. A house to represent the people. And the Senate representing the states. The legislative power was balanced between the large and the small states. The executive power of the government was placed in one man, the President of the United States. He would be responsible to the people for all departments of government. As a check against the possibility of abusing his executive powers, it was provided that his veto could be overridden by a two-thirds vote of both houses. To further protect the rights of the people under the Constitution, a judicial body, the Supreme Court, was created. This body, operating independently of the legislative and executive branches, could be called upon to interpret the constitutionality of any law. Thus, the three branches of the government are constantly balancing and checking the power of each other.
Chapter 3. An Important Paper. "Stop," said Annie. "We turn here, onto Fifth Street, then onto Chestnut Street." Jack and Annie trudged through the heat until they came to Chestnut Street. It was much quieter and calmer than Market.
"Look, that's it," said Jack. He pointed to a brick building with paned windows and a tall bell tower. A sign in front said, "Pennsylvania State House."
"Great," said Annie. "So this is the plan. We say we're delivering Dr. Ben's midday meal. Then, to get his attention, we say we're from the press. That's what the rhyme tells us to do.
Got it, said Jack. Let's go.
Jack and Annie walked up a pebbled path to the state house. When they reached the brick building, they knocked on the front door. No one came to let them in. Annie tried to turn the door's handle, but it was locked. Looking around, Jack noticed that all the windows were closed. Most of the blinds were drawn. No one's here, he said. He felt sweaty and tired from the humid heat. We came here for nothing. Darn, said Annie. Maybe we should go back to Dr. Ben's house and wait for him there. Suddenly, the door swung open. A guard in a blue jacket and white pants stood before them.
He looks like a soldier from the American Revolution, Jack thought.
No guests are allowed to enter, the guard said.
But, sir, we're not guests, Annie said politely. We're delivering a midday meal to Dr. Ben. It's from his daughter, Miss Sarah.
All right, come in, said the guard.
He moved away from the door.
Thanks, said Annie.
She and Jack stepped into the building.
The doctor is in the assembly room, the guard said, pointing down the hall. Wait outside the room until they take a break.
Yes, sir, said Jack. Jack and Annie tiptoed down the dark, shadowy hallway.
Listen, said Annie.
Loud voices were coming from a room ahead. The door was half open, so she and Jack peeked inside.
This must be the assembly room, whispered Jack.
The large room had high ceilings and two fireplaces. The tall windows were framed by heavy drapes. Men sat at tables with green tablecloths. They wore long jackets and shirts with white ruffled collars. They had all their hair that came to their shoulders. At the front of the room, a white-haired man sat on a raised platform in a high-backed chair. He seemed to be in charge. Another man stood at a front table, hurriedly writing. Several men were talking.
Gentlemen, you are wrong.
No!
You want to give too much power to the national government.
He is correct, but we have no Bill of Rights or freedom of speech. What about trial by jury?
The man in charge banged a gavel against the desk.
Order, he said. Raise your hands if you wish to speak.
What's going on? Annie whispered to Jack.
I'm not sure, Jack whispered back. I'll check our book. He reached into his bag and pulled out their Pennsylvania book. He opened to the chapter about Old Philadelphia. He turned the page.
Whoa, Jack whispered.
He showed Annie a painting in the book.
Look, it's the same.
Annie looked at the painting, then back at the men in the room.
It's this meeting? Annie whispered. What's going on?
They read silently. In 1787, after the Revolutionary War, America was made up of 13 separate colonies. Each was like a different country. Would the colonies remain separate or become a nation of states? That summer, 55 delegates met in Philadelphia to answer this question. James Madison took daily notes in the meetings. In the end, he wrote America's most important document.
They're creating the United States Constitution.
The Constitution? That's a big deal, whispered Annie.
A huge deal, whispered Jack.
He and Annie read more. The document was the United States Constitution. It contained the basic laws that defined how the American government works. The Constitution created the presidency, the Supreme Court, and the Congress. James Madison's work made him known as the father of the Constitution. Besides Madison, some of the most famous delegates were General George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, and Dr. Benjamin Franklin.
Dr. Ben, said Jack. I think I see him, whispered Annie.
Where, said Jack.
There, said Annie. The old man in the glasses.
Annie pointed to an older man with wispy gray hair and glasses. He was wiping his face with a handkerchief.
Yeah, whispered Jack. That's Dr. Benjamin Franklin,
Annie whispered.
I can't believe it, said Jack.
George Washington banged his gavel again and rose from his chair.
We must stop now, he said. Let us put aside our differences and enjoy a meal together.
The delegates began rising from their chairs.
Some were still grumbling and shaking their heads. George Washington walked over to Benjamin Franklin. Ben leaned on his walking stick as the two men spoke quietly. "Let's go," said Annie.
13 original colonies. Na-na-na, North and South Carolina. Uh-huh, Connecticut, Delaware. Georgia, Maryland, Massachusetts. New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York. Pennsylvania,
The making of the Constitution involved many compromises. Considering the vast differences in culture, religion, and businesses, it's understandable that not everyone in the 13 original states was completely happy with the finished product. The balancing act became making enough states satisfied with the Constitution in order to ratify the document. And one of these major compromises was on adding a Bill of Rights to the Constitution. As you may know, the Federalists were confident the new federal government would not take away the rights of the people because, you know, separation of powers, checks and balances, and the fact that there is nothing in the Constitution that states the government can take rights from the people. You're worrying about nothing. Now, the Anti-Federalists weren't so sure this was enough. They wanted guaranteed rights, or states like Massachusetts, Maryland, South Carolina, and New Hampshire would not ratify the document. On the other hand, Delaware did not care about guaranteed rights. They ratified the document immediately. Once they pinky promised, the Constitution was ratified and everyone was happy. Except they weren't done. They had to add guaranteed rights for all in a Bill of Rights. And before we go any further, I want to thank Pete Goldman and Pamela Benham for suggesting this video on the Bill of Rights. Okie dokie, let's get to the Bill of Rights, which are the first 10 changes to the Constitution, and we're going to start with Amendment 1. The First Amendment guarantees 5 rights, which off the top of your head, you could probably list some or all of them. Go ahead and try right now. Did you get them? In order to ensure we remember them all, we use the acronym RAPPS, and that's R-A-P-P-S. Acronyms are super helpful for remembering what these letters stand for. R-A-P-P-S stands for Religion, Assembly, Petition, Press, and Speech. Now, when we say religion, we're talking about two things. The government will not establish any religion, meaning you can't have a religion forced upon you by law. And secondly, you are free to have any religion or no religion. Assembly refers to our right to gather in groups, usually to protest, and sometimes we assemble together in a flash mob, because we just want to dance. Petition gives us the right to appeal or complain to the government. Press refers to media of any form, newspapers, news channels, social media, and it gives us the right to report on stories and news that's happening. And of course we have the freedom of speech, meaning we have the right to our opinions and to express ourselves whether people agree with us or not. Disclaimer: these rights and freedoms are not unlimited. An excellent rule of thumb is, if you're breaking a law, if you're doing something that will endanger others, you may not have the right to do these things. So let's take a closer look at limitations to our rights by going over the freedom to assemble, which is found in the First Amendment. This guarantees our right to assemble in groups in a public place. When thinking about somewhere private, like, say, your room, it is no longer acceptable to say, "I have the right to assemble with my friends inside of your home." This is trespassing, and trespassing is a crime. Now in 1791, as they are writing the Bill of Rights, the Revolutionary War is fresh in the back of everyone's brain. And under British rule, the colonists lost many rights and wanted to make sure that they'd never lose them again. So after the American Dance Dance Revolution, which by the way, we won with our mad skills, it was time to make sure a government would never attempt to take away these rights from the people. So the first few amendments in the Bill of Rights are responses to British rule in the past. So the Second Amendment guarantees us the right to bear arms. And this of course means to own a firearm or gun. Right? I knew you knew what that meant, and probably not the other thing that you might have been thinking of. Now this is a pretty big deal because the British tried to take the colonists' weapons weapons away, most notably in the raids at Lexington and Concord. While this can be a contentious issue in today's time, right, do we have the right to own a gun, or should we have the right to own some kind of firearm, the Supreme Court has been pretty clear on its interpretation of the Second Amendment that people do have the right to bear arms. The Third Amendment is the odd one out. It reads, "No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner." To the modern citizen, it is the most useless of the 10 amendments in the Bill of Rights. I mean, really, how often does a soldier come knocking on your door saying, "I need a place to stay, please let me in"? This doesn't really happen, but back in the time of the colonies, where we were under British rule, this was a law. We had to allow soldiers into our house, feed them, and give them a place to stay. The next couple of amendments are called the Rights of the Accused, and those include Amendments 4, 5, 6, and 8. Amendment 4 prohibits unreasonable search and seizures, and you're going to need to know this term for your test. Seizure, of course, referring to the action to seize, which means to take or repossess. And so basically, the police cannot go through your stuff or your house unless they have a warrant to do so that is issued by a judge, or if they have probable cause. The Fifth Amendment has a lot of goodies for those accused of a crime, and it's going to establish the due process of law. So if you are being accused by someone for some kind of crime that might put you behind bars, we are owed the fairness of law, and that's known as due process. This includes a number of things, and first on the docket is the right to a grand jury in a federal crime. Meaning, if someone's going to put you behind bars, they better make sure that they're doing things the right way by having an impartial jury of your peers listen to your story and make sure you're really guilty of the crime. Another right of the accused given in the Fifth Amendment is what we call double jeopardy, and this is the right to not be tried for the same crime twice. This one's a little confusing, but if a courtroom finds that you are innocent of a crime, they can't come back and say, "We're going to have a second trial because we found more information. We're going to try and make sure you're guilty this time." They can't do it a third time, and so on and so forth. And this is confusing for students because they say, "Okay, great. If I'm innocent of stealing, now I can steal whatever I want because I have the right of double jeopardy." Well, that's not quite how it works. If you are found innocent of a crime on a particular date in a particular event, then you cannot be tried for that same crime. But if you steal something the next day, well, then you can be tried for that crime, because it is a separate instance. Another right in the Fifth Amendment is your right to remain silent. These are included in your Miranda rights. You have the right to not testify against yourself. It's up to the prosecution, who has the burden of proof, to find evidence that proves you are guilty of the crime. The final right in Amendment 5 is called eminent domain, and this means if the government needs to take your property or your things, then they must compensate you for it fairly. So if the government needs to take your home or the land that your home is on, then they need to give you more than 10 bucks for that land and home. They have to give you a fair value. And this might surprise a bunch of you. You did not know that the government could take your stuff and give you money for it, but they can, especially if they need it for some kind of greater public good, like building a road through a property you own, or a bridge, or some kind of infrastructure. Moving on, we have Amendment 6, which gives you a couple of things if you're accused of a crime, and the first is a speedy and public trial. Remember, if someone's accusing you of a crime, you're innocent until proven guilty. But if you are arrested on January of 2022, and your trial is set for December 2025, this is considered to be too long to defend your good name. And while you're defending your good name, you need to have a public trial, meaning people can be there and see what's happening and know there's nothing corrupt going on, like you paying off the judge, or the prosecution not presenting any kind of evidence and still being called guilty for the crime. You also have the right under the Sixth Amendment to an impartial jury, and that's a word that we're going to need to know. Impartial means fair and balanced, not leaning towards any side. Now, the jury is the group that's going to determine your innocence or guilt by listening to the facts and the story, and it would be very unfair if the people that were judging you were your buddy or your classmate or your best friend. On the other hand, it would be equally unfair if the jury was full of people like your ex-boyfriend, your angry neighbor, or that one science teacher that just really did not like you. What's up with science teachers anyways? Now, it is your Sixth Amendment rights that allows you to know, what are you accusing me of, and who exactly is accusing me. The people who are accusing you cannot be anonymous. They must appear before you so you can see them and see their face and say, "Aha, it was you." Finally, the Sixth Amendment gives us the right to legal defense, even if we cannot afford a lawyer. So if you're incredibly poor, you are going to be given an attorney with amazing anime hair, and they're going to defend you in a court of law and do a goofy dance after they win. Okay, so the Eighth Amendment is the right to not be cruel and unusually punished. Now, obviously, all of the old forms of punishment that involve public humiliation fall into cruel and unusual punishment, but it includes other things, like excessive fines and excessive bail. Any form of torture violates the Eighth Amendment because that is incredibly cruel. And of course, the punishment must fit the crime. If you steal fruit stripe gum, which I don't even know why you would bother with, you're not going to get 30 years in prison for that crime. That would be excessive and cruel and unusual. And now we're going to go back a ways to the Seventh Amendment, which does not really fall under the rights of the accused. You see, we're not talking about criminal law where you're stealing something or you could be guilty and go to jail. We're talking about civil law, which is just generally disagreements between people. Like when the tattoo parlor messes up your tattoo. This is not a crime, but you might want to sue them over this disagreement. So the Seventh Amendment guarantees a trial by jury in a civil lawsuit so that you and the tattoo parlor can go to court and have a jury of your peers listen to your horrific tale. Now, the Ninth Amendment seems tricky, but it's not. It reads, "The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people." Confusing, but essentially it means just because some rights are written down does not mean other rights that aren't written down can be denied. For instance, there's nothing in the Bill of Rights that says you have the right to wear tall socks or do bad cosplay. But just because it's not written down doesn't mean that these rights can be denied. Unless Congress writes a new law that specifically states you cannot do something, we should assume we have the rights to do things even though they're not specifically listed in the Bill of Rights. The 10th and final amendment in the Bill of Rights states, "The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people." Basically meaning, if it's not in the U.S. Constitution that the federal government should be doing this thing, then it's saved for the states. They can handle it however they want. Things like education are left up to the states. The federal government makes no mention of education within the Constitution. They say, "Hey man, we're gonna leave that to you, Florida. It's up to you." Same thing goes for the driver's license. That's why every state has a different driving age or different requirements for operating a motor vehicle. It's because the federal government does not want to do this. And so they leave it up to the states. That's the 10th Amendment. When we can tell the government we have the right to privacy, "You cannot search and seize my home without a warrant," then it reduces the power of the government and it gives power to the people. Same thing with getting a lawyer or having a speedy trial. We're putting the government on the clock and telling them, "Hey, you don't have unlimited power. We have rights." And that's a very cool thing. I hope you learned something. We'll make more videos soon.
Folks, that's right. Hey, government, you don't have all the power, right? That's what we're celebrating today, is the fact that the government does not have all the power, at least in our country, the United States of America, because we not only have a constitution, which makes our government and tells it how to run and tells it what kinds of powers each different branch has in the government, but we also have something else. See, the Founding Fathers were not satisfied with the Constitution because through all of their arguing and discussing of how should the government work and how can it be most fair and how can we make sure that we don't end up with one person or one branch in charge of everybody else? How do we make sure that there are checks and balances? Part of what they realized by having those conversations was that they really needed to make sure that the people had rights, had just as many rights, probably even more. Because you just heard it there, folks. In the Bill of Rights, it actually says that every other right that you have it. There are so many rights, they're not even all written here, right? You have way more rights. You have more rights than we could ever write in this Bill of Rights. And so all the ones that we haven't mentioned are still your rights. So we the people, we're that's where it all starts, right? We the people. So how are you doing out there, fellow people? We are learning about the Bill of Rights on Amy's Kids Show because it's super important. Because if we don't know our rights, well, how do we make sure we still have them? Right? Somebody could sneak in, especially the government, right? Or some other people in our country or in the world could sneak in and take over and take away our rights, and we wouldn't even know it. We wouldn't even know it, right? And I think that's why I've heard a famous quote by President George Washington, and one of his famous quotes has to do with just that. He felt that the freedom of speech, which is in the First Amendment, was so super important that if we did not have the right to speak, and if the press, that means the newspaper and social media and the television, if they don't have the right to say what's happening, what's really happening, then the worst thing possible would happen. George was worried that if we couldn't speak to each other and tell the truth and say what's on our mind through the press and to each other, then our rights would be stolen from us because we wouldn't even know it, right? So that First Amendment is so super important that we have the right to speech, the right to say what's on our mind, the right to argue and say, wait a minute, I object. I don't agree with what you just said. That's worth celebrating. I'm glad they took a second look at it.
It's a perfectly good plan. Why won't your anti-federalist just ratify this constitution?
Well, if I sign this, well, I know you're gonna be the one telling me how to pray. And if I sign this, well, I know you'll take the right of free speech and press and petition away. And if I sign this, well, I know that you will not be able to leave my guns alone. And if I sign this, I know trust you I cannot, I just cannot trust you won't quarter in my home. 'Cause I don't trust your constitution, and I think it needs something more, like the Bill of Rights. Stop the government from trying to take more. If I sign this, yes, I know you're gonna search, you're gonna seize me up without probable cause. And if I sign this, you'll make me self-incriminate or be deprived without the due process of laws. When I sign this, well, I know that any trial I'm in will carry on for years. And if I sign, well, I know to say goodbye to any jury of my peers. 'Cause I don't trust your constitution, and I think it needs something more, like a Bill of Rights to stop the government from trying to take more.
Just sign it,
till a Bill of Rights is added to the plan. If I sign this, well, I know that you'll be cruel and unusual if you have to punish me. And if I sign this, well, I know you're gonna say you've listed all my liberties. And when I sign this, well, I know you're gonna think that unclaimed rights belong to you. So I won't sign this. And you better go create something that protects us from you. Create something that protects us from you. 'Cause I don't trust your constitution, and I think it needs something more, like a Bill of Rights that stops the government from trying to take more.
Just sign it,
till a Bill of Rights is added to the plan.
Just sign it,
only then I'll approve the Constitution.
of Rights is that epic and important. It's your right to say what you want, right to a fair trial, and your right to watch Dance Moms all day. Each and every day, the Bill of Rights affects you and your life. But before we talk about the Bill of Rights, it's important to mention how it came to be. For that, we have to look back at
the Constitutional Convention.
The Constitutional Convention started May 1787 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where 55 men from 12 states came together to establish our government, define our rights, and essentially run our country. No big deal. Lots of big names were there. James Madison, James Monroe, and Alexander Hamilton, just to name a few. But there were also some big names that didn't attend. Thomas Jefferson was in France at the time. John Adams was also abroad, serving as a minister to Great Britain. Even some of our favorite little rebel rousers like Samuel Adams, John Hancock, and Patrick Henry didn't attend because they smelt a rat in Philadelphia, tending towards a monarchy. Their sentiments bring us to how the Bill of Rights came to be. Several men and states believed that the Constitution didn't address the specific rights of the people and therefore refused to ratify it. So, James Madison, known as the father of the Constitution, wrote out amendments that would address these rights. 12 amendments, to be precise. Eventually, 10 of them would be ratified, and those 10 are what we call the Bill of Rights. Now, whether you see the Bill of Rights as a living document, a permanent document, or something in between, we should all agree that it's more than just a document. This little piece of paper has the potential to keep you safe, happy, and free every day. So yeah, the Bill of Rights is pretty important and very epic.
And now, another fact of Congress. Way back in 1789, people were noticing some things our new Constitution didn't take care of. So the first Congress came up with 10 changes, or amendments, which became known as the Bill of Rights. The First Amendment is important because Congress actually told itself what it could not do. If written using today's language, the First Amendment would say, "You can't pass laws that keep people from practicing their religion. You can't pass laws that keep people from speaking their minds or publishing their ideas. And you can't pass laws that stop folks from getting together peacefully to express their views to their people in government." This amendment, plus the others in the Bill of Rights, reassured the nation that the powers of their new government would have limits. As President George Washington said, "The amendments strengthened our characteristic rights."
Constitution took days and nights, but the writers still had to go look at it twice, 'cause the states that reviewed it said, "Here's some advice, it should guarantee freedom, yeah, that would be nice." So the founders said, "All right," and wrote the Bill of Rights. Yep, the first 10 amendments are the Bill of Rights. Well, the Constitution took days and nights, but the writers still had to go look at it twice, 'cause the people reviewed it said, "Here's some advice, it should guarantee freedom, yeah, that would be nice." So the founders said, "All right," and wrote the Bill of Rights. Yep, the first 10 amendments are the Bill of Rights. Number one says we can worship as we please. We can have meetings, large assemblies. We can write what we want, it's called the freedom of press. What yes. we feel we can say out loud, we can express.
Yes, concerned about securing your house and your farm? Through Amendment 2, you have the right to bear arms in order to be free. Do you get the picture? Each state has the right to form its own militia.
Number three says no soldiers in homes. The government can't just force you to loan your own private house so their soldiers can sleep, especially not in times of peace.
The Fourth Amendment is sure to get applause. No searches or sieges without probable cause. But when there is belief that a crime has been done, a warrant can be ordered then to search someone.
Then on to the Fifth Amendment, no need to tell the government things that might send you to jail. You cannot be accused of the same crime twice. That would put you in a double jeopardy, it's not right.
Oh, the Constitution took days and nights, but the writers still had to go look at it twice, 'cause the states that reviewed it said, "Here's some advice, it should guarantee freedom, yeah, that would be nice." So the founders said, "All right," and wrote the Bill of Rights. Yep, the first 10 amendments are the Bill of Rights. Well, the Constitution took days and nights, but the writers still had to go look at it twice, 'cause the people reviewed it said, "Here's some advice, it should guarantee freedom, yeah, that would be nice." So the founders said, "All right," and wrote the Bill of Rights. Yep, the first 10 amendments are the Bill of Rights.
Number 6 gives 6 rights to the accused, like the right to know which law you might have abused. It gives the right to a fair and public trial, your own defense counsel, you know there's no denial.
I'll tell you seven is simple when a trial is civil, meaning that no one in the dispute is a criminal. You can ask for a jury in these cases too. Usually they're over money, somebody wants to sue.
For the 8th Amendment, we compliment our government. It won't allow cruel or unusual punishment. Face the judge's hammer and end up in the slammer. You won't pay excessive bail in any given manner.
All the rights that we have, says Amendment 9, cannot be confined only to these written lines. True. Just because a freedom isn't here on this list, the government cannot say it does not exist.
What was meant when the last of the 10 was written? Government only has power it is given. In order to be equal, power not listed in the Constitution shall be given to the people.
Well, the Constitution took days and nights, but the writers still had to go look at it twice. Cause the states that reviewed it said, here's some advice. It should guarantee freedom, yeah, that would be nice. So the founders said, all right, and wrote the Bill of Rights. Yep, the first 10 amendments are the Bill of Rights. Well, the Constitution took days and nights, but the writers still had to go look at it twice. Cause the people reviewed it said, here's some advice. It should guarantee freedom, yeah, that would be nice. So the founders said, all right, and wrote the Bill of Rights. Yep, the first 10 amendments are the Bill of Rights.
Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights. The first 10 amendments are the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights. The first 10 amendments are the Bill of Rights. Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights. The first 10 amendments are the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights.
Take a moment to think about the U.S. Constitution. What's the first thing that comes to mind? Freedom of speech? Protection from illegal searches? The right to keep and bear arms? These passages are cited so often that we can hardly imagine the document without them. But that's exactly what the writers of the Constitution did. The list of individual freedoms known as the Bill of Rights was not in the original text and wasn't added for another 3 years. So does this mean the founders didn't consider them? The answer goes back to the very origins of the Constitution itself. Even prior to the first shots of the American Revolution, the 13 colonies worked together through a provisional government called the Continental Congress. During the war in 1781, the Articles of Confederation were ratified as the first truly national government, but establishing a new nation would prove easier than running it. Congress had no power to make the states comply with their laws. When the national government proved unable to raise funds, enforce foreign treaties, or suppress rebellions, it was clear reform was needed. So in May 1787, all the states but Rhode Island sent delegates to Philadelphia for a constitutional convention. A majority of these delegates favored introducing a new national constitution to create a stronger federal government. Thanks to compromises on issues like state representation, taxation power, and how to elect the president, their proposal gradually gained support. But the final text drafted in September still had to be approved by conventions held in the states. So over the next few months, ratification would be debated across the young nation. Among those who championed the new document were leading statesmen Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay. Together, they laid out eloquent philosophical arguments for their positions in a series of 85 essays, now known as the Federalist Papers. But others felt the Constitution was overreaching and that more centralized authority would return the states to the sort of tyranny they had just escaped. These anti-Federalists were especially worried by the text's apparent lack of protections for individual liberties. As the conventions proceeded, many of these critics shifted from opposing the Constitution entirely to insisting on adding an explicit declaration of rights. So what was the Federalists' problem with this idea? While their opponents accused them of despotism, wanting to maintain absolute power in the central government, their real motives were mostly practical. Changing the Constitution when it had already been ratified by some states could complicate the entire process. More importantly, Madison felt that people's rights were already guaranteed through the democratic process, while adding extra provisions risked misinterpretation. And some feared that creating an explicit list of things the government can't do would imply that it can do everything else. After the first five states ratified the Constitution quickly, the debate grew more intense. Massachusetts and several other states would only ratify if they could propose their own amendments for consideration. leading Federalists recognized the need to compromise and promised to give them due regard. Once ratification by 9 states finally brought the Constitution into legal force, they made good on their promise. During a meeting of the first United States Congress, Representative James Madison stood on the House floor to propose the very amendments he had previously believed to be unnecessary. After much debate and revision, first in the Congress and then in the states, 10 amendments were ratified on December 15, 1791, over 3 years after the U.S. Constitution had become law. Today, every sentence, word, and punctuation mark in the Bill of Rights is still considered fundamental to the freedoms Americans enjoy, even though the original framers left them out.
Bill of Rights was adopted here. First Amendment is the one I love. It lets us speak our mind. It lets us worship God Almighty. Never leaves us confined. First Amendment, you're so fine. In the Bill of Rights, you're first in line. First Amendment is the one I love. Without you, what would we become? These days, the first is under attack. They wanna take our freedoms back. But I know how to handle all that. We must preserve this liberty. Make petitions for the courts to see. So we can keep this republic free. First Amendment, you're so fine. In the Bill of Rights, you're first in line. First Amendment is the one I love. Without you, what would we become? Favorite son, he did the work after the fighting was done. Jefferson, Adams, Thomas Paine too, wrote the Constitution with you. But when it came to the Bill of Rights, you're the first one in the fight. It took 3 years to get it done. It was ratified in 1791. First Amendment, you're so fine. In the Bill of Rights, you're first in line. First Amendment is the one I love. Without you, what would we become? First Amendment, you're so fine. In the Bill of Rights, you're first in line. First Amendment is the one I love. Without you, what would we
Well, folks, we did it. We came to the end of episode 172 of Amy's Kids Show, and we have been celebrating what the Founding Fathers did there in Philadelphia almost 300 years ago now. They argued, they discussed, they communicated, and they said, I don't trust your Constitution. I think it needs something more, right? A Bill of Rights that stops the government from trying to take more, right? So that's what they came up with. Some people call it a masterpiece of compromise. but it is definitely written in the spirit of harmonious cooperation, which is what we are all about here on Amy's Kids Show. We've got to get along, folks, right? We've got to get along. All you kids out there know that. And we need some rules and some boundaries, some guidelines. Like, how are we going to handle it when we want to argue? How are we going to say it when we disagree? Right? It takes courage. It takes confidence. And you need to know your rights. Just like our friend George Washington said, right? That if we don't know our rights, if we can't speak freely, well, someone might come along and steal them, right? So we're all here together, folks, keeping an eye on each other, keeping an eye on our rights. And we have three important branches of government that our Constitution made for us that keep an eye on each other, right? They check and balance each other. We have courts right now who are listening to debates about whether or not our government took too many rights away during COVID. Right? Where schools closed down, where businesses closed down, where people not allowed to say how they really felt, where people made to wear masks and cover their faces, making it hard to talk and breathe. Did all of that happen? Well, yes, it did. And was it constitutional? Now that's the question, right? Now, luckily, we have courts and branches of government that check each other, right? So the courts right now are working on a number of cases where people like you and me, that's you kids out there, right? And me, said, wait a minute. I don't think that was right. I think my rights were taken away. And so they're doing what they need to do to engage the government to defend their rights. And that's what's going on, folks. Every day, every generation, you kids out there, you're not the first ones to deal with this. No, your parents have gone through it. Your grandparents have gone through it. Your great-grandparents have gone through it. And every time we go through it, we learn something more, don't we? I mean, look at the founding fathers to begin with. Why were they all fathers? Well, because women didn't have a right to go to the Constitutional Convention back then. Wow! Look at how much stuff has changed. Welcome to this beautiful world, and I'm glad you're here because you're the greatest.
If we pull in opposite directions, we'll get nowhere. But if we all decide to pull together, we'll find it will make things easier. We call that cooperation. Solve, I reckon there is no doubt. If I work with you and you work with me, we'll find a way to figure it out. We call that cooperation. We collaborate and we communicate.